site at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. Glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. Today is Tuesday, January 20th, 2026. We're all thinking about Dr. MLK, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the observance of the holiday, the celebration of his life, the meaning, and the messages that live in us and hopefully live through us. We have purpose, we have meaning, we have intent, and mission. And that mission is the movement towards freedom, towards liberation, towards justice for ourselves, our families, and for all human beings. The mission is movement towards understanding the balance in the universe, in the atmosphere, in the ecosphere, the relationship between humans and non-humans that share creation. Well, we're gonna just go today into the issues that are top of mind in the community right now here in Minnesota, and I think around the world. We're all sort of angry, concerned about the death of Renee Nicole Good, what it means, and about the continuing arrest and work of ICE immigration in Minnesota. And we want you to be involved in this conversation on our screen if you're watching us on YouTube or LinkedIn or Facebook. There's a QR code. Click on that. You can be a part of the program. We want you to share this conversation with people in your network. Let them know that we're live talking about what's going on in Minneapolis and Twin Cities right now. I'm particularly concerned about what I witnessed, and kudos to Sister Nakima Levy Armstrong, who with colleagues and friends, with people who are people of conscience, went into a church in St. Paul and in the spirit of the carpenter from Nazareth, overturned tables and challenged people to give meaning to the message of the professed source of their religion. So we'll talk about that today as well. We'd love to have your comments. Join the conversation. Go to YouTube or LinkedIn or Twitter, and you'll see the ability to click on and get involved in the chat. We want to have a live chat conversation. But if you want to come on screen and on the radio, we're live on KFAI. We welcome you there as well. I've got two special guests in the room already. I want to introduce them and ask them just to say who they are and give their impressions about where we are, what's this weekend, this past 2 weeks have meant to them. Haley Taylor Schlitz is here. She's one of the columnists for Insight News, and joining me for the first time is Professor Walter Grayson, who is at McAllister College. And I'll have you both talk about, you know, who you are and what you bring to the conversation, to the work that we're doing in community. But thank you both for being here. And without, you know, belaboring this, Haley, jump in. What's on your mind? You've written already. Your stories are in Insight News and on national platforms as well. What's on your mind right now?
You know, thank you so much for having me part of this discussion. Al, I'm really glad to be back. I am, well, where my brain space is right now is thinking about how MLK Day was yesterday. And, you know, I was part of several annual commemorations of Dr. King, and really, the question that was going on in my mind is, what do we do after that? If we don't grapple with the causes that we have spent decades and that Dr. Martin Luther King spent his entire life discussing and fighting against, I fear that we may fall into a pattern of what this country does too well often in thoughts and prayers in gatherings, in events, commemorations again, but then we return to habits and, you know, things fall on the back burner. So that's where my mind is at, and that's reflected in the writings you mentioned, but also I feel it's reflected in a lot of people's minds as we feel the energy, especially in Minnesota, which is where I am, just really this charged environment. It's getting more and more tense. I'm wondering, you know, that's where my brain is at.
Mm-hmm. Tell people who you are, Haley. Introduce yourself. I'll let you talk about who you are so they have a sense of the authority that you speak from.
Yes, no, thank you for that, Al. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing for a year and a half. Before that, I was a U.S. history teacher. I graduated from law school when I was 19 years old, and I graduated from undergraduate at Texas Women's University with my degree in education when I was 16. So I've been really invested in empowering and educating the community. I'm an author, speaker, activist, but also from the legal landscape, I'm also very aware of what's going on here as well.
And Haley serves with me on the board of directors of Greater Twin Cities United Way.
Yes,
and her presence as the youngest member of that board is significant and important. But her energy and her fierceness is the most important thing. She brings that to the newspaper, Insight News, to the writing she does with us and for national. I think she's going to be featured regularly now on the Hub News, which is part of Narrative in Nubia, an important platform that I support. I'm actually rocking my Narrative Nubia gear right now because I'm all about what we're doing with Narrative in Nubia. Professor Walter Grayson, welcome. We talked briefly before. Thank you for jumping on this call with short notice. Introduce yourself, if you would, and tell us what's on your mind as you consider what's happened here in Twin Cities around the murder, the death, the killing of Renee Good.
Yes, sir. Thank you both for letting me be a part of the conversation. I am new to the Twin Cities. This is the middle of my fifth year living in community. I live downtown St. Paul. But this work has been a part of my life since I was born. Born into doing civil rights work, in the mid-70s. And so it's been a long, long, long path. I'm professor of history. I carry the legacy of Mahmoud El-Qadi. At McAllister College, advancing that work now into this century and training more young people to follow Haley's footsteps and follow and to support the projects that you run, Al. In terms of background for me, I was initiated in doing anti-apartheid work with the folks who were in exile from South Africa in the late 1980s, and they trained me on how to build the coalitions to that ultimately led to the Freedom for Nelson Mandela. Did a ton of work desegregating schools that trained white nationalists through the early 1990s, most notably Villanova University. We've done a miracle there in terms of making it a place that welcomes people from all cultures around the world. Served as one of the liaisons in Philadelphia for Bill Clinton and the National Dialogue on Race with John Hope Franklin. But most people know is the stuff I've done in the last 25 years. So around 2003, Marvel Comics named me a Wakandan ambassador because I redesigned Wakanda for their comic books. And the stuff that I wrote back in the early 2000s showed up in the Black Panther movie, both Black Panther movies. And so that's what most people know. They associate me with Wakanda and Afrofuturism, the idea of what kind of world we build tomorrow. So now that I'm in the Twin Cities, I'm doing a ton of work around Rise and Remember in George Floyd Square with Reconnect Rondo, with the Hallie Q. Brown Center. One of my students just built a virtual Roblox platform that lets you explore the history of Rondo. So the stuff that we're doing is pressing the front edge. But as a historian, I'm unusual in that I have a lot of economics background. I have a lot of virtual reality and really technical kind of artificial intelligence background. So as much as I love the study of the past, I also do a lot about building a much, much better future.
And so thoughts as you witnessed, as I did, the coverage of the police ICE action that resulted in the death. I call it the murder.
So I don't refer to it as Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They have far exceeded the legislative coverage and authority that they have. I refer to them as a federal paramilitary force. They are operating as a gang. I found out about the shooting of Renee Good within about 2 hours. I was on Snelling, just below Marshall Street, and immediately my phone began to blow up. Like, my time here, I spend every day working with community organizations across the state to be able to be a part of effective rapid response and to begin to defend families that are vulnerable. So among the first calls I got were from people in St. Cloud that were being rounded up by groups of 8, 10, 12 at a time with no media coverage, with no one getting photography. They were ambushed by these forces. And what I immediately discovered is that we were focusing that first day on Minneapolis, rightly, and then the attack right after the shooting on these children coming out of school. They moved very rapidly within a couple days into St. Paul and to kind of the immediate surrounding communities. But those days for me were 16 hours round the clock, getting people prepared for this kinds of escalation. And so the other piece in the first weekend was taking our public officials aside and getting people to stand up and file that federal lawsuit that the AG's office and the governor put together last Monday. And so in the last week, I've been doing work all over the country connected to the King celebration. So I've been mobilizing people from the East Coast in like Newark and Philly. Currently, I'm doing work out in Oakland in the Bay Area, but getting people to send money to our communities and to send people, getting legal observers, getting lawyers, getting statements from international voices to condemn these actions. So as I said online, this is a moment very much like when South Carolina attacked Fort Sumter in 1861 and essentially provoked the Civil War, except that we are on the front line of the federal government attempting to turn our state into a prison. And so this is a much different challenge of not just having the force of the Union and the idea of someone like Abraham Lincoln behind us. We're now facing the anti-Lincoln. We're facing 20 governors, 20 state legislatures, the Congress, both houses, the Supreme Court, essentially attempting to rewrite our lives and take away all of our rights.
Great.
Haley, jump in, go ahead.
I was just really resonating with everything Professor was saying as he was speaking. I was reflecting on my night at the memorial after her death, after her murder, as I refer to it personally as well, and really just being in that space with her neighbors, with her family, with the community, and how important documentation is, you know, as Professor was speaking about all the things that his students are doing, all the work that he has done, how important documentation is. And I want to kind of throw a bone out for the listeners, if they do want to get engaged in another way, is that the Attorney General Ellison is really, I feel like, showing Minnesotans especially what accountability looks like. He actually created a direct way for people to report what they've experienced and what they've witnessed, if you have videos or pictures, so that way Minnesotans can respond with facts in court, but also as we discuss, you know, our ever-changing society. I think, and to give the exact website before I forget, it's actually www.ag.state.mn.us/federal-action. And it really is a space that, like, it curates and protects the records that we take in this time. It's for videos, photos of pretty much modern testimony of what we've witnessed, and you can upload it, and it's a reservoir, and it will keep it there. Again, that way, as we go to courts or as we just continue to reference back on this in history books and learn and shape policy in the future, we have these factual witnesses to reflect on and draw from. So if you've experienced something directly, any listeners, or witnessed it firsthand, and if you document it carefully, you can keep the original file, write down the date and location and what happened, and upload that to that website. And AG Ellison's office is making sure to keep those records safe for future use. So just as Professor's talking, I'm thinking all this good work, how can we ensure that it transcends throughout time, throughout generations, throughout administrations, and throughout all the different events that we're seeing? And I guess especially as a Minnesotan, that's something that came to mind. So I did want to drop that out there.
Thanks, Marnie, who's listening, and dropped the URL there. So that's there, and you have the instruction. You know what to do. Go there if you're experiencing or hearing or learning or documenting. Here's a place to capture and archive and ensure that your voice, your knowledge is preserved and shared for the record. And so, Professor, you talked about this being a moment like, what did you say, the end of the Civil War? The start of the Civil War. Go into that. Tell me more what you meant by that.
Yeah, and I'll say for both of y'all, please use my nickname. Everybody calls me Gray, just like the first half of my last name, so y'all can just call me Gray.
And I'm Al, so that's good. That's fine. Okay. All right. This is unscripted. This is we're simply being together in community. And so for the listeners on KFAI, this was three people at the moment having a wonderful and personal conversation, sharing it with the thousands of you who are listening on KFAI and with the many, many more that may be connecting across YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms. We want you to be involved. And so there is a comment section. You can drop questions, comments, what you like, what you dislike. If you want to be on the program, say that, and we'll bring you in to have you state your case. We want to engage you. This is about community. So go ahead, brother.
It's all good, bro. So yeah, this thing that I was troubled by immediately, and I'd say broadly, coming and being new to the area, this strikes me. People immediately will say it's just Minneapolis. And they mean like that little phrase, those two words, just Minneapolis, are really, really troubling and deceptive in that it immediately draws a kind of circle around what they're going to focus on. So, of course, when I know there's stuff going on in St. Cloud or Mankato or Bemidji, I'm like, yeah, this is bigger than that. This is not just in our big city. Right. And then there's this whole other thing that, I'm still figuring out about, okay, well, we talk about Minneapolis, but we also mean St. Paul. And so like, there's this thing about how do we talk about the Twin Cities? But then within that, within all the stuff within Minnesota about how do we talk about this, it's horrifying to me when I start to see news coverage, it would always be like the second or third thing down. It would be like, oh, there's Iran, there's Ukraine, there's this other incident in Venezuela. And oh yeah, this thing in Minneapolis. And I'm like, no, that's not at all what's happening. Like, this has got to be the number one. This has got to be the lead story. And I've just seen it over and over again since I moved here, is that New York gets way disproportionate coverage. LA gets way disproportionate coverage. And even when the Midwest, they're going to focus on Chicago before they talk about Twin Cities in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so to get around all of that and to make people realize this, I was very proud folks locally brought the attention. It's like, nah, this is much bigger. Y'all are not seeing everything. Over and over again on social media, you're seeing people report and send in stories, and you're like, this is horrendous. Kids are getting taken from their bus stops. Like, folks are having to organize to protect their schools. Right. Just the level of police suppression that was being leveraged by these federal troops, there's just been nothing like it in 200 years. And we're celebrating 250 years. It looks like what the British tried to do to the colonists back that set off the American Revolution. But now these forces are much more developed. The weaponry is much more sophisticated. Their ability to control our information networks is off the chart. And so to make people understand this, I had to say, this is what it looks like. This is what the South claimed the North was doing to set off the Civil War. But it's what they're actually doing in reality to actually suppress Minnesota. Great. And so that's why I use that frame, is to talk about Fort Sumter. It's like that whole debate around the idea of the Civil War and, oh, was this a war of Northern aggression? No. Lincoln was trying to preserve the Union, and we can get into the issues about slavery and the preservation of Union too. But it's really South Carolina attacked this federal outpost. That's what starts the conflict. And instead of it being a state, say we were Minnesotans and we were angry about MAGA policies, which we are before, we've been mad all year. But we didn't send a militia into DC and start saying, yeah, we're going to take over and make you repeal these policies. That would have been like what South Carolina did. This is so much worse because it's got the force of the federal government backed up by 20 states controlled by MAGA politicians who like what they're seeing.
So to use the term, this is almost provoking civil war. Is that a good term for this situation?
So that's why we've seen the governor be very hesitant about deploying the National Guard. It's why people are very concerned about this idea of the paratroopers coming from Alaska coming to Minnesota, although a lot of people are arguing.
Why Alaska?
Well, of course, it's cold. So this was one of the things we knew when they were going to send people up from down south up here last weekend. It was like, yeah, you want to stand around outside of Minnesota on a sub-zero weekend. You'll find out. You'll realize this is a bad idea. But if they have federal troops coming from Alaska, they're equipped to deal with whatever kind of weather situation we're in. But the other thing is we have a lot of intelligence operatives saying this is a false flag to say that they're getting prepared for Minnesota when in fact they're going to go to Greenland. And so we're in a very dangerous spot. And that's another piece of this is that we as Minnesotans need to connect to our allies in Canada, to our allies in Europe. And this is a global conflict that is manifesting in our state, not just a national one.
So tie together, Renee, George Floyd, Renee, good. The governor as a candidate against Trump with Kamala Harris, right? Our AG, Keith Ellison, successful in prosecuting the killer of George Floyd. Tie that to this question of, as you said, preparing National Guard troops with the thought of it being they'll come from Alaska to Minnesota. But while that sleight of hand is being deployed, there's a real concern about troops being deployed to Greenland, and connect that to what has happened already in Venezuela. What's the connection, the through line for all of this?
Yeah, no. So,
and with all of that, the almost effort to dismiss the Epstein
absolutely
examination. How does it all fit together?
No. So the ongoing effort to comply with the federal law required all of the documents in Department of Justice to come out about Jeffrey Epstein. That accelerated this project that they've had in mind in terms of, they refer to it as a unitary executive, that essentially the president will have all the powers of Congress, all of the powers of the Supreme Court, and essentially function as a king, as an emperor, as long as it's aligned with this agenda, this Christian nationalist agenda. And so that piece, whether it was Venezuela, whether it's Greenland, sabotaging relationships with NATO, that's all the big scheme of things. That's all kind of attempting to undo most of the 20th century and the kind of free society that was constructed through the first two world wars. This is Trump's ego, but it's more like the people around him, the people who fund him, attempting to remake what is the world society in this century. For us locally, we are much like the people in Venezuela who are being used to kind of cow other people from resisting. They want to see us submit. They chose Minnesota and the Twin Cities to be like, if we can make them surrender, we can make them hide in their homes and just give up, all these other places will fall next. It'll be Illinois. That's next agenda. Certainly Wisconsin. Like, that is the psychology behind this, is that if we're forced to surrender and to kind of run away from the conflict, they feel much more confident about breaking the back of California, breaking the back of New York, and then basically consolidating this kind of fascist rule, not just in the United States, but if you look at where all our military bases are, that then gets their military compliance across Europe, across Asia, and sets a new normal that's in Trump's image. So that's the thing. We can see the killing of George Floyd, or I'll even go back to Philando Castile. These were all efforts to show the strength of the police power over the citizenry, that our lives are not valuable, and that if they can eventually convince us to be scared of them, their agenda is much more easy to advance.
Haley, jump in.
You know, I'm really just, as he's talking and I am hearing more along with you, Al, and the listeners about this one executive and about the idea behind just this being the beginning of the Civil War and really trying to take that from the history lens of things. I was a fifth grade U.S. history teacher, so taking that from the lens of the history of our country, it really has led me to reflect on Dr. King's letter from Birmingham jail. I have a couple of quotes in front of me, so I'll get to that in a second, but I just really think that rereading that letter in general for any listener is really important right now because it's so close to what we are living in today. Not just the chaos of like the government and the power and the abuse that we're seeing, but also a reminder of those that choose the false sense of peace over justice and the fight for justice and trying to use media, Black media, strong, vibrant Black media and other outlets to raise awareness about that. So again, I have a couple of quotes. He wrote this letter from Birmingham jail on April 16th, 1963. He was jailed for participating in a nonviolent direct action. He actually wrote it to respond to a public statement from a group of white Alabama clergymen who criticized the Birmingham campaign as unwise and untimely. So with that in mind, this is really similar to many on the far right or modest who are concerned about protests in Minnesota rather than what's causing the protests in Minnesota. So a couple of quotes that I want to just, I'm picking them out, but to prompt and guide our discussion is one of them that's very famous is injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I feel like we're seeing a lot of that, especially in what Gray was just saying about the one executive and kind of stringing together the things we're seeing about the Epstein files or Greenland or Alaska and the troops. Like truly all of this is just think of like weak links in a chain, like one potential, cavity in this injustice is a threat to the stability of justice in our whole country. Additionally, there's this quote that I really like, and it's a little bit of a lengthy quote, so I'll just read this part of it. You deplore the demonstrations taking place in Birmingham, but your statement, I am sorry to say, fails to express a similar concern for the conditions that brought about the demonstrations. I am sure that none of you would want to rest content with the superficial kind of social analysis that deals merely with effects and does not grapple with the underlying causes. It is unfortunate that demonstrations are taking place in Birmingham, but it is even more unfortunate that the city's white power structure left the Negro community with no alternative. And again, we're seeing a lot of that here from George Floyd to Renee Good. We're seeing a lot of that here with Black and Brown communities in Minnesota, but nationwide, globally, and that also strings together what Gray was talking about in Venezuela, what we're seeing in Ukraine, like truly a global people try to address protests and consider, you know, the different laws and such that regulate protests or uprisings or just First Amendment issues when it pertains to the United States, but truly what is causing communities to resort to things like protesting on the streets, resorting to social media and media awareness. These conversations are symptoms of a greater disease. And then the last quote I'll pull is this one that I also really felt was directly applicable to our conversation. Like a boil that can never be cured so long as it is covered up, but must be open with all of its ugliness to the natural medicines of air and light. Injustice must be exposed with all the intention, with all the tension its exposure creates to the light of human conscience and the air of national opinion before it can be cured. So again, these conversations, and again, this is why I think such a strong and vibrant Black media, such as this conversation with the Al McFarland Nubia, so forth and so on, these are the things that we need. The mechanisms for justice is what's so important. And I think that that part of the Birmingham letter, you would think that that's someone talking about today. You would think that's someone talking about Minneapolis, someone talking about, to Gray's point, St. Paul, the Twin Cities, Minnesota, the country at large. You would think that that's a quote from an article I read last month, last week, because that's how directly applicable it is. So when you say we're at the, we're kind of reliving or refollowing the cadence of the outset of the Civil War, I'm truly seeing history repeat itself. And as a history teacher, you know, I definitely felt my mind go there. So I thought that it'd be good for listeners, but for this conversation here, a couple quotes from that letter, because especially with MLK Day being yesterday, it's really, really applicable.
Professor, you've dropped a couple of items in the to share. Could you walk us through those?
Oh, so One of my recent projects that's done okay is the graphic history of hip hop. And I work with Tim Fielder, who is just a brilliant artist on a number of projects, but especially mini comics. And so about a year ago, we did one for Kendrick Lamar after the Super Bowl performance that he did that leveled a lot of the same kinds of criticisms we're talking about today. But as we saw the protests, or really not even protests, these are defenses of our communities that are unfolding, we put together this project, a two-page mini-comic that invokes Prince, who is, of course, a native son here, and talks about his song, Let's Go Crazy. This was my way of raising the emergency banner to say this is not just a normal everyday process. The stakes are ridiculously high. And so this has resonated widely. We've gotten hundreds of millions of people downloading this art and going after and sharing this as a way to talk about our connection to each other. And so it's right because it says, Dearly Beloved, it takes the somber tone of kind of mourning of this moment that we're in, but it also is defiant. It is also raising us up to find the strength and find the joy that we need to resist and to protect and expand our freedom going forward. The second page of the comic goes in three panel sets. Look at George Floyd and this moment of breathing while back on black, and it says this is highly suspicious from the perspective of law enforcement. And of course he is killed, but the world rose up and said, we're not doing this anymore. This will have to stop. And then I look back to Philando Castile, the idea of moving or driving while black, and that's so ridiculous, completely unacceptable from law enforcement. We're seeing this now. They want us all in our homes until they come to kick in the door and take us away. And still around St. Paul, Castile is a legend and we still celebrate him and hold him up as the best of our city. And then this most recent moment is that when you stand up as a white woman, stand in unity with your community, that is the emergency status. That's the red flag that we have seen in the last 2 weeks, that we can't allow more white people to join with immigrants and black people going forward. This is the end from the conservative perspective of the society that they want. And so that's the space where I say history is judging this moment and saying that Minnesota was on the front line that stood up and defended freedom for all people. So that's the comic. We're sharing it for free. So if you go to the link and you can just click on it and download it, we hope people will share it widely and take that inspiration from it to stand up everywhere.
Awesome. Let me put the link on the screen here. I think I can do this. Oops, I hit the wrong button, sorry. I actually went and clicked it on and went to the page. So I was gonna share the URL, but you can put the URL again in the chat. Yeah, there it is. We've got
yes,
it.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm talking with Professor Walter Grayson, attorney Haley Taylor Schlitz, and we're talking about what's on our mind. You know, I live in North Minneapolis. I drove down to 24th and Lindale just sort of get a feel for what happened. I wasn't there during the protest, but the community is my community. That's 3-4 blocks from our office, Inside News, over on Bryant Avenue. And I raised my family in this community, in this neighborhood. So I'm very concerned for the safety of my neighbors, of my community, and for the trauma that this incident is making. You know, I watched the video a couple of days ago when they went into St. Paul to Among Elders arrest, and they showed ICE bringing, first of all, knocking on the door once or twice, and then the battering ram, and then 8 or 9 officers going in with their rifles or assault weapons holding, going in, and then after a moment bringing out an elderly gentleman with like a tablecloth, you know, around his shoulders, and some shorts and tennis shoes. Horrific. And they said they released him an hour later, right? What's this all about? But I also looked at a young lady who was across the street in gut-wrenching pain, it seemed to me. And my thought is, what is the impact of this trauma on this child? What's the rest of her life going to be like, witnessing you know, what I would call a goon squad, you know, tearing down a residence, entering a residence? And so what is the impact of this trauma, and what is the intent? I think you said it, Professor, the intent is to demonstrate that an entire community can be brought to heal, can be brought into submission. And if they are successful in creating this attitude of submission here in Minnesota, they are then empowered, emboldened to do the same thing more broadly in more cities around the country, therefore the country. And as they use that as part of the formation of a new international posture, and that reeks of an intent for kingship by Donald Trump. The idea of that group creating a new order of power emanating from, you know, a patriarchy, right, that will deprive justice, that will say it is the law and nothing else, and not the people. What do you think?
Go ahead.
Either one, just reflect on that.
You know, I'll jump in then. I'm really stuck on, and how I'm really think that as we talk more, and Al, as you were just posing that question, how correct Gray is that we are at the outset of, similar to the cadence of the Civil War. Again, with MLK on my mind, I really have two questions that I want to pose, if you will, and in building off of what you just asked, Al. Really, MLK said some people, or it's dangerous to be more devoted to order than justice. So, I think a good thing to drop in for the chat to consider, especially as Professor Gray jumps in and builds off of your question, Al, to drop in the comments, like, what are you devoted to? Are you more devoted to order, or are you more devoted to justice? Are you willing to protect this country and human rights? Are you willing to do what needs to be done, because they're willing to do what needs to be done for their ideal America, or their ideal reality? So where do you lie on the spectrum of devotion to order or to justice? Because sometimes they're in conflict. And also, a quote from MLK is, justice too long delayed is justice denied. And I think that I will hand it off to Professor Gray, but what I will say is, are we going to be the generation that denies justice? I think that's a question that we need to sit with as this develops. You know, so I know Professor Gray, you'll jump in, but I wanted to build off of your question, Al, because I think that, again, just sharing as we talk, where my brain is puzzling this into everything.
Yeah, there's a bunch of layers to kind of peel back here in this moment. A lot of the work that I have done, so my second book was on the way in some Black communities, the idea of not even integration, but access to white businesses, to white institutions, in the period after Dr. King was assassinated, became a substitute for the kind of freedom that we fought for over the generation before his death. And so I've been very troubled for my entire career by this notion of us saying how far we have come. There's a really interesting infographic people put up online where it's like a timeline, and it shows, oh, there was slavery from 1619 to 1865, and it's like a red line. Then there's a yellow line for segregation and Jim Crow from 1865 to 1965. And I always get enraged that there's this little green space at the end of the line, and that's like, oh, now we have all these civil rights protections. But it ignores the war on drugs, and it ignores the prison industrial complex. It ignores the ways that segregation adapted, like, and particularly thinking about Minneapolis and St. Paul and the construction of 35W or the construction of 94. and the way that these things destroyed the heart of our Black communities.
Right.
Like that is not a green line. That is right. not something to be celebrated, that this is the way our world has evolved around us. And so it leaves us in this moment when we ask the question of, do you prefer justice or do you prefer order? We fall into this place of just believing that it's okay to sit back and watch the National Football Championship game on TV and then wake up and watch whatever particular program we like when we get in the morning, or maybe on the weekend, see a Netflix movie. There are all these creature comforts that are not freedom.
Mm-hmm.
They're about us complying. They're about us just going along and having as easy a life as we want. And so I've been sitting here, I'll be frank, like given stuff I do, it's been me reliving the last week of Dr. King's life in 1868. Like I've been stuck on the mountaintop speech. Is that to be here in this moment and to be in service to people, and to see, frankly, the immigrants and the white Americans who stand up, and you would have never seen this kind of crowd that we have in Minnesota, in all these cities, stand up the way Dr. King had to get just a few people to march in Selma. Like, we have achieved a great deal culturally here to have so many people stand up.
Right.
Like, that's what's inspiring people, frankly, across the country.
Right.
Is it like, we need to learn to fight like Minnesotans do.
Well, let me ask you to sit with that for a minute. So two things are happening. Number one, I agree that there is this phenomenal energy of the community, and I'm speaking particularly to the listeners of this radio station, KFAI. I think the people who are on the street are by and large KFAI community activist leaders, and I applaud them and support them and celebrate them for their fierceness, their integrity, and for their insistence on challenging this illegal, in our minds, work of the federal government, of the Trump administration. But at the same time, there's a huge debate in the Black community about, should we sit this out? Should we bring our bodies and our voices into this fight? Does this fight belong to us? I believe it does. I think we should not sit it out. But I'm saying the discussion is going on. What do you make of it? And what do you say when people raise the question that we are skeptical, that we should put our bodies and our energy and our organizing skill on the street behind the murder of Renee, because in history, we've been betrayed again and again, even by our friends on the left. What do you think?
Now, let me, can I jump to that real quick?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
So again, I'm back and forth across the country. I got like another 10,000 miles to get to do the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm just gathering everything I can to come back and make sure we're stronger. I saw this incident Sunday at Snelling and Summit, where the folks came into the church and they had Don Lemon in tow.
Yep.
And they confronted a congregation where one of the leaders was coordinating field operations for ICE in St. Paul. That's exactly where we're at. Who was at the front of that? It's a Black woman stepping up and saying, this is what's got to happen.
Right.
And the thing that was brilliant about it is we weren't going in there like Dylann Roof and trying to shoot up a Bible study.
Right.
We were going in there just saying exactly how you framed it. I loved how you said that. What's going on with these money changers in here?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with these people that are not about the faith and the practice of the Christian church? That is what needs to happen. Now, I'm going to say, all the Southern Baptists are ready to come running up here and create more problems. This was an escalation. But it's making people pay attention to the fact of how evil what is happening around us is. So, no. In the broader sense to your question, Al, I'm saying this idea that we can look back to the Kamala Harris campaign and people attacked her for not being Black enough or insufficiently Black because she was child of Jamaican immigrants and South Asian parentage and all this stuff, or you can go back that I'm dealing with colleagues right now who love to attack Barack Obama saying he's biracial, didn't know his Kenyan father, he's not part of the Black American experience. We've had 20 years of driving these wedges in between our community around ethnic lines, around immigration lines. And this is where we are vulnerable. You could see that we didn't sustain for either the 2016 election or the 2024 election because of these divisions, even around gender. And can we rally behind women, period, to be our national leaders? So this thing about, you know, we've come so far, right. Well, the consciousness still has to grow. And this is where I do have a critique of Dr. King going right. back, is that he names the triple evils, where he's talking about militarism, capitalism, and racism. He doesn't say sexism. And so I'm like, right. this is something we can build where we need to be pay more attention right. to who we're bringing right. to the table and how we do this. And that's right. the piece for me in the moment that we're in. Right. is that, yeah, we need to stand united and drawing these right. lines where we say some people don't belong or I don't like the way the person said this. Nah, right. nah, if you are right. about freedom, you're on the same right. team. You're not here just to kind of line your wallet and make sure right. you are working for the billionaires who are gonna then right. take away everybody's freedom regardless of where you're
right.
from.
Right. I love the way you said that. If you're about freedom, you're on the same team. I think that is really the message that I hope a lot of the communities hear, because especially after the election, there was a lot of that frustration with, you know, Black women, as you talked about sexism, Black women in particular have been such a turnout, especially in the Democratic and blue waves. And not seeing that return has been deflating in a lot of communities. But and again, how you framed it, I think a lot of people see these issues as historical issues. A lot of people see these issues as, like when I was teaching my students, like this was hundreds of years ago. It absolutely was not. The country's only hundreds of years old. And, you know, like I told my students, you know, like Ruby Bridges has TikTok. Rondo yeah. is just a couple years ago. What's happening in Minnesota is happening right now, and it needs to be headlined more. But no, as you're talking, I don't have too much to add because you really did encapture it beautifully. But I do want to quote this poem, if you'll let me, Al. It's called First They Came by Pastor Martin Neil Mahler. It's pretty short, so I'll read the whole thing. First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unions, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. So, and it's kind of like that whole underline, like Lord of the Rings, the trees stayed out of it. And then when the only the trees were left in the world, there was no one to ally. There was no one to band with. There was no one to be stronger in numbers. And that's what I tell younger generations. Oftentimes you hear, oh, my vote's one of a million. It doesn't matter. If that was true, why are they trying so hard to take it? If that was true, why did people die fighting for it? It's that same energy of if we are on the same team for freedom, we're on the same team for freedom, because if they'll take yours, they'll take mine and vice versa. So like I said, I don't have too much to add. You hit the nail on the head, but I do think that's really, I think that is the question now.
So let me still sit with this a little longer. I guess I'm looking at the question of how we allow ourselves to be divided. And I want to say that as I watched the first protest in both in South Minneapolis and downtown, and particularly at the hotel downtown, I saw a lot of what appeared to me as Somali kids, Somali young people. And so I'm thinking that there are a lot of young Black Somali kids, at least at that point. I think the same is true on the street in South Minneapolis. I don't know about what's happening in North Minneapolis so far, but that still with the conversation in the community, in the Black community, of should we sit this one out? That's number one. And that conversation comes up through the segment of our community that promotes this idea of foundational Black Americans as different from Africans anywhere in the world who are all victims of the same colonizing imperial experience, right? And so some people are saying that we African Americans have been dissed by the Latinos and dissed by the Asians and dissed by the Somalis, who all have come to build good lives on the sweat and labor that we've provided this country. That is true, that we've provided the sweat and labor, but they are here, right? And so the question is, is it makes sense for us to say that they have to wait in line until we get ours? Or is there another approach? Have you heard that argument? And how do we set that argument aside? Because at the end of the day, this is not about who got here first. It's about how we change the entire planet. How do we change the entire financial, economic, and social governance structure for human beings that promotes equity, justice, fairness, balance, as opposed to unfair advantage and polarization and manipulation of the many for the sake of the few? What do you think?
You want to go first, Haley?
Sure. You know, I just, I have, you know, building off of what we were talking about earlier, just a couple more thoughts. I feel like if we felt that way in the Civil War, no, we'll fight our own battles and you fight yours after. If we felt that way in Congress, no, we'll fight our own battles. We don't need to consolidate. We don't need to work with other people of other races or other genders or other religions. We will fight our own battles and you fight yours. If we felt that way about, showing up to support speeches like MLK speech, if it was just, you know, a very narrow population there in his audience, if there was just a very narrow population showing up on the streets to protest, we're not alone. We're not the majority of this country's population. And so alone, we should not try to do it. We are a majority of America's population. If you consolidate minorities, we're a majority minority country. And I say minorities because we do face similar experiences. Oftentimes, just non-white will put you in a similar experience, facing racism, sexism, discrimination of various kinds. And so if we're of the mindset we will fight our own battles and you fight yours, you after me, it's not going to be nearly as effective, and it's going to take much longer. More people will die, more generations will go without rights. It really is something that, like Al said, we can't sit it out, and we can't be, and like you said, Gray, of this belief that we're all on the team of freedom, but for some reason that has different fractions. It does not. We are all on the same team. So that's building off of what we talked about last time, but truly we need to reflect on how consistent this idea has been throughout history as well.
Let me introduce you both to my friend, Tommy Vivas. He's the owner of Pimento Jamaican Kitchen over in South Minneapolis, with locations in St. Paul as well, I think. Maybe three locations now, Tommy. Welcome to the
program. I'm Benny Macasca. Yes.
I'm so glad to be here. And thank you for being here. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
I'm concerned about businesses, how businesses are being affected by the ICE presence. And you're in the restaurant business. Many restaurants I'm hearing are either cutting back for two reasons. One, there's less traffic, people are afraid, or they are concerned about employees. And many of the workers in the hospitality industry may be from other countries, citizens or not, but there's a fear that's permeating. How are you finding that in your business and among your peers in the restaurant and retail business? And thank you for coming.
Yeah, so I would say it reminds us of COVID again. We're trying to figure out what to do to pivot, to stay afloat, and to take care of our community, our employees, and you know, and it's been quite a struggle, not just for Pimento, but across the industry. I've spoken with my peers, and we're all going through it. I've spoken to the vendors, and the vendors are all going through it. So it's been a nonstop challenge. And of course, people are scared to come out, or the streets are empty, right? It feels like economic warfare being declared on the Twin Cities, or on the state of Minnesota, rather. And as it relates to our concern for our employees, I have even Native American employees who are scared to come to work. I'm literally walking with my passport everywhere I go, right? Because that's what this moment requires and calls for, and it's sad and unfortunate. But we have Minnesota vibes and Minnesota nice, and we know we're home, and that Jamaican in me naturally knows that we're going to pull through this and continue to be that model city for the world.
Can I just add in, Gray, real quick, like a one sentencer? What you're saying, what he was just saying, really resonates with me. I think that it is in line with what I was alluding to, in the sense of it. That carrying your passport because you are fearful of what may happen is an experience that is is reaching into everyone in all cultures. And those kinds of shared experiences really, truly, I think, is what will unite us on the same team as freedom. Because like I said, it's purely people who are non-white. Well, white isn't even really a thing if you think about it. And so it's really just a way to consolidate power. And so this is the shared experience of people who have historically had their power stolen. And so carrying your passport, that's something I've also picked up. I too am fearful of just being stopped and thrown out. They don't have any standards. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I appreciate you joining. Awesome. Because that.
Yeah, guys, here's what I fear. I fear that somebody here can be on edge, unhinged, and fed up. And somebody here can easily go off the deep end and do something horrific that he or she feels is in response to this massive sense of oppression and oppressive energy coming from our government, from the armed militia that's descending on our families. And if that happens, what next? And I think that our government is seeking to provoke that. They're trying to find the people that are on the edge, that are in great despair, and who will, in almost a spirit of suicide, take the final step. And as that step is taken, it justifies opening the gates of hell, moving in those regular army people to say the Twin Cities is unmanageable and in the grip of revolutionaries or crazies, and therefore the government must shut us down. So what do you think about that?
That's really crucial, and I want to transition to it, both connecting. Tommy, welcome, great to hear your voice, sir. But also something we've gotten in the chat. Dora Jones says, yes, immigrants need to be in line for benefits. Yep. We are always going to be on the bottom as Black people. Keep on defending that and giving excuses to that. We are not the same team that has the problem that we have as African-American people. We think we're all on the same team, and no, we're not. Until America cuts the check for African-American descendants of slaves, all these businesses need to be shut down. I'm sorry, Tommy, that's not me. I'm not saying that. And that's my opinion. So to come at that in this particular point of the volatility of the moment, Al, you are so right. All it takes is one person that has one of our registered firearms. You're seeing folks out on the street defending their neighborhood. And that is the thing. If just one ICE agent goes down, they put it up on a sign on one of their press conferences. One of us, all of you. And this Nazi slogan came out and said they will exterminate people should any of the people that they favor be killed. So that is the razor's edge that we're on. But I want to say there's a very different model, and it's not just from Dr. King. It's not just from the policy stuff I mentioned about Obama or Biden, but it combines that. If our governor can do this, he can align and create essentially a trade partnership with both California, New York, and Illinois. And that's the heart of the U.S. economy. You get our four states working together in this emergency situation. We could offer PPP programs, just grants, that will keep these businesses open and keep people meeting their payroll. That'll stabilize everybody. We saw this, and all those loans were forgiven. They didn't have to pay any of that money back. We can do that right now. And it's not even in the form of reparations. That the reparations work that I've done has been about New Jersey. We rebuilt the entire state economy, and it's supported by former Governor Murphy. We're working on the support from new Governor Sherrill, where we actually rebuild and reinvest in places like Rondo and North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis, because it makes everybody more prosperous. We have this sense that when we don't invest in each other, there's this piece that we're losing. But if we, and this is ultimately my closing point on this, is immigrants need to follow the lead of Black Americans about the way that this fight has been taken forward over years. If we can do that, there's a sub lesson in that about young people not engaging in generational neglect, but generational care. When you're talking about the young Somali brothers and sisters in the street, it's not about turning the back on older generations of folks. It's about extending care so that we all move forward together. And that's a process we as leaders in all of our own spaces We have to nurture that and sustain that. So thank you for letting me get all that out there.
That's fine. I'm going to ask the station to let me go over a minute or so Tommy can make his comment. Tommy, go ahead.
Yeah. We'll see. Let me start by responding to Honorable Sister Nora Jones. Thing one, I'm all for reparations. Reparations make total sense. Let's do that. Right. All right. But beyond that, I think what we need to sit with is a couple of things. Right. When I think of Marcus Garvey, he was an immigrant. Right. And 100 years ago, he was talking about these same issues. And there was always that language, that notion of no, let's separate and wanna do for one thing and we do our thing. And it hasn't really gotten us that much. One of back to Sister Dora's point,